What's up, listeners? Blue Wire has a new podcast coming at you soon. Abner Maris is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Maris, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is. On the podcast, they chat about topics like the state of boxing, Abner's journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champ, his American dream, sports, music, culture, and family life, and much more. So listen to On the Hook with Abner Maris wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English out on Tuesdays and episodes in Spanish out on Wednesdays.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal, to help you score more fantasy points.
Welcome to another edition of the IDP Corner, sponsored by FantasyPoints.com. My name is Justin Varnes. You can follow me on Twitter at DownWithIDP. Joining me is fellow IDP analyst over at FantasyPoints.com, Mr. Tom Simons. Thomas, what a weird game that was.
Oh, man, was that brutal. it was like nobody wanted to win the game.
It's great for all our defensive players. There's lots of INTs and lots of sacks and recovered fumbles. You know, when we see bad offenses, IDP managers start rubbing our hands together.
I have to ask, how many viewers out there fell off their couch when Daniel Jones tripped over himself?
You could see it coming. You could see his eyes got too big.
The sound of this noise is my head hitting the microphone.
Couldn't even pull that off. All right, well, we're gonna dive. We're gonna look forward because there's not a whole lot to look backward on that game. We're gonna look forward. I want to start with the big trade news this week. We all knew this offseason that Yannick Ngakoue desperately wanted out of Jacksonville, and there were a lot of teams involved in rumors as to trying to get them. One of those teams was the Baltimore Ravens. They did not end up getting him. Obviously, he went to Minnesota Vikings. And then while Minnesota and Baltimore are on their bye week, they happen to make a trade. So Ngakoue is now a Baltimore Raven. Along with that news, we did get news that Danielle Hunter also is having season-ending back surgery. He never even played a snap this season. So Minnesota's pass rush just, you know, completely – they're just completely folding. Yeah, they're folding up shop, clearly. So that might mean – I'm hoping that means more playing time for Ifedi Odenigbo, who is one of my favorite, you know, like sleeper picks. But I think really the bigger discussion is Ngakoue's fit with Baltimore. What does this do for their defense as a whole? And how do you see Ngakoue fitting and what is his fantasy value going forward?
Well, I think his fantasy value is going to stay the same as it was when it was Minnesota. And we talked about his fantasy value in the summer. In particular, the reason why Seattle didn't go after him so hard was the fact that Ngakoue is not a very good run stuffer, but he's awesome when it comes to coming off the edge and being a pass rusher. So he's going to fit in well with this Baltimore unit that basically is looking for a bookend with Calais Campbell. Now, you got to remember that Ngakoue and Campbell were teammates with Jacksonville, and they both thrived in the system there together, and they kind of fed off of each other and helped each other see less double teams. Now, this also helps the secondary. Now, I know a lot of folks out there are wondering, how is this going to affect the secondary? Well, if you're applying pressure from both ends of the defense on bookends, then that means that the quarterback's going to be under a lot more pressure. They're tend to make mistakes because they throw quicker, and that bodes well for the Ravens secondary. So I like this trade, and I think it improves the defense all the way around, and it helps the guys like Patrick Queen settle into his role as the anchor in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's going to help Ngakoue and Calais Campbell, neither of these players need help. They're both playing great. And they obviously have a few options here up the middle. And obviously they're not getting an amazing pass rush out of their outside linebackers. They might play Ngakoue more as an outside linebacker, although I don't think they will. But even if they do, at this point, your league, you know, if you're in one of those leagues where if an edge rusher becomes an outside linebacker, they've just become a general linebacker to you, and then you can't use them in your defensive line settings. This is not going to happen in Ngakoue this late in the season, so I wouldn't worry about that.
And Derek Wolfe is obviously, it's got to be a significant injury, a neck concussion, for them to go out and get Ngakoue at this point in time, which pretty much puts a buzzkill on Derek Wolfe and his fantasy value.
For sure. All right, so let's move into these matchups this week. We're going to start with Pittsburgh at Tennessee. As always, what we're doing here is both Thomas and myself spend basically the entire week looking at several different angles. We're looking at, production from these players, their matchups, the stat crews. There's so many things that, their snap counts, their roles, what we see on the defense, who's moving around and switching positions. All that goes into a big article that I do. It goes into all the projections that Thomas does. So what we're going to do here in this podcast is we just kind of give you just a couple of hits from each team. So just a few things for you guys to take and hopefully use. If you want more information like this, you can visit fantasypoints.com. You can use the promo code VARNS10. To get 10% off. You have access to us through the Discord app, where a lot of our subscribers will reach out to us daily, asking us questions, start, sit, all that sort of stuff. We're happy to help with that. So we're just going to hit a few things for each team as we go through. So Pittsburgh at Tennessee. Thomas, what did you see so far? How's it looking for Pittsburgh? We obviously had a brutal injury.
Yeah, speaking of hits, Devin Bush tore his ACL, done for the year. That's a major blow to the interior of this defense, especially with the fact that the Steelers do not have any depth at inside linebacker. They have, obviously, Vince Williams, who's playing, having a career season. But what's going to happen to Bush's role is that they've got Robert Spillane came in week six and took 53% of the snaps, and he stepped in for Bush. Did fairly well, but, again, you have Ulysses Gilbert as a second option, and he's been inactive every game this year. And then you have safety linebacker Marcus Allen, who could come in and play the hybrid dollar inside linebacker role. And other than that, they don't have any depth. So it would not surprise us if they go out and get a veteran linebacker or they trade for somebody, especially with the trade deadline coming up. You know, and now that Baltimore's made the move on Ngakoue, Pittsburgh, who is challenging for the division, is going to need to shore up the inside of that interior defense, or else they could be in for a long stretch.
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but depending on whatever they decide to do free agency wise, hopefully trying to sign some depth. Spillane is obviously, Thomas, as you're saying, this is. We're not saying he's not some terrible player or anything, but so far he's just kind of bounced around on Tennessee and Pittsburgh's practice squad. I will say that in his limited action, he did look pretty good. But this is a team that's trying to go deep into the playoffs. This is a very good defense. And they certainly are going to need help next to Vince Williams. And I think they've got a couple of different options. Any other thoughts on that? I have a few possible thoughts, but.
Well, one thing, I mean, first of all, you mentioned Spillane didn't look that bad. Well, you also have to take into consideration it was Cleveland, and right. Cleveland was just horrendous. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't even get off the bench properly, let alone get on the field and get that offense rolling. So anybody can, look halfway decent in against the Browns. Now, as far as trades go, it's hard because, there's so many different angles that general managers want to take. I mean, there's the old George Allen with the Washington Redskins in the 70s, where he would look at teams that lose, and, you know, after a loss, and that's the teams that he would go seeking players for, because teams would be, you know, general managers would be more apt to be down on their players and more willing to unload somebody. You know, so you got to look at teams that are not doing well, who maybe have a contract that they may want to unload, and it's, in particular, it'd be a one-year deal, because they know that Bush is going to return sometime next year. So I don't see this as, you know, go out and get a starting linebacker that you're going to have for 2 or 3 years. But then again, you never know. I mean, they could use Bush and whoever they pick up, and Vince Williams becomes the odd man out. But, you know, I don't think Pittsburgh is a knee-jerk type of operation.
Well, I don't know if this is going to happen, but something I'm going to watch carefully is they did use Terrell Edmunds a lot as basically a dime linebacker last season. They haven't really used him as much in that position this year, but where they do have depth on their defense is in the secondary. They've got Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson, Mike Hilton has been a great like Swiss Army knife for them. But remember that they also have Cam Sutton, who they really like. And he basically would be the starter if any of those three cornerbacks went down. They could get him more involved. They also signed Sean Davis, who obviously knows their defense well. So one thing that Thomas and I are going to be looking carefully for going forward is, particularly these next couple of weeks, is what do they do? Do they install Edmunds as more of a linebacker role and then move Sean Davis, or, like, as you'd mentioned, Marcus Allen, or possibly even Cam Sutton, get some of these, use some of their depth at in the secondary? If so, then Edmunds's value, and possibly Hilton's as well, will continue to rise. My note on Pittsburgh involves a piece of their secondary, and that is Minkah Fitzpatrick. I'd mentioned several times on here that Minkah's fantasy value was largely going to be based on big plays. Well, he got his big play this week. Yeah. He had a pick six. So if you've been struggling with Minkah Fitzpatrick as one of your DBs, and he's not coming through with a whole bunch of tackles, hopefully he rewarded you this week. The only other thing I want to add is that without that pick six, he had one assist. So if he's not coming through with those big plays, this is something to, you know, that is clearly a pattern now. But that pick six is also the reason why he's worth having toward the back of your DB roster. You know, if it's 2 to 3 tackles a week and you're waiting on those interceptions, those forced fumbles, they are coming, and you guys got rewarded in week six. How's it looking for Tennessee?
Well, the Titans last week, they had three DBs took 100% of the snaps, a fourth one took 94%, and then a fifth DB took 78%. So three quarters of their game, they were in a nickel or sub package scheme, and that could happen again against Pittsburgh. So I wouldn't be surprised if they either took a DL out and came off the edge more with like Landry and used that with five defensive backs. But I could see them running five defensive backs out there again, at least 60%, if not more, against against Pittsburgh.
Great note on Jeffrey Simmons. He obviously missed a game or so because of COVID. He was on the COVID reserve list. He looked great, picked up right where he left off. He had six tackles in week six, four of which were solo. He had a sack, two tackles for loss. He was really starting to pick up steam before Tennessee had that wave of COVID hit. So if you've got Jeffrey Simmons in one of your defensive tackle spots, keep rolling him out there. I think we're just seeing him start to get moving here. Moving on to Dallas at Washington. Donovan Wilson, that's a player that we've been trying to watch carefully. What did you see this week?
Well, Wilson, he started at safety this week again. He had, I believe it was 87% of the defensive snaps, and he hung a 9 total tackle, which was a 7 solos, 2 assists, no big plays, but at least 9 total tackles on his fantasy mantle. So he's been hitting what we thought he would do, even though the first game that he started, he made some mistakes and they took him out of the game, and put him in and out for until they finally had some comfort with him being back there. But what surprised me was Leighton Vander Esch. I mean, what were your thoughts on Vander Esch's time in the game on Monday night?
Well, we weren't sure he was going to be active. So he was, you know, we were hoping he would be active. Hard to just jump right back into a full-time role. So we were not expecting, and we did not project him with a full-time role. And he played 52% of the snaps, which I think is a pretty strong number for him with his first game back. I can't imagine, unless something has happened and it doesn't look like it so far, this practice week, that we'll see Vander Esch out there for 100% of the snaps again next to Jalen Smith. So we're hoping to see his snap count and his production come up. The only thing to mention here is that this is for all the Dallas players, but in particular guys like Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, and obviously this will also apply to Donovan Wilson, is that Washington's stat crew tends to lean toward assists versus solos. So Vander Esch, Donovan Wilson, you know, Wilson last game had 9 tackles, 7 of which were solo. If he gets 9 tackles this week, it might be 3 solos and 6 assists. If you get one of these games from one of your Dallas Cowboys, just understand that a lot of that is a product of the stadium they're playing in.
Definitely. And after you saw what happened tonight between the Giants and the Eagles, this Dallas and Washington game is another one of those. This could be ugly. I mean, consider this. Dallas is 2-4, and they are half a game ahead of Philadelphia for the lead in the division. So that just goes to show you what's going on in that division. Now, speaking of Washington, John Bostic has got people scratching their heads. He's taken 100% of the snaps in 2 straight games, but for the second straight game, he's pulled a dud out on people. I mean, he had just 2 solos and 2 assists last week, and the week before that, he had 2 solos and 3 assists. This is a red flag, and we're not sure exactly why this is going on. I mean, unless we can get a lot of film on these games and watch Bostic closely, I don't know if he's just slow to the ball or if he's you know, the scheme that they're using, or if the offenses are running. I don't think the offenses are running away from him. That's not the problem. The problem seems to be that he's just not getting off the blocks and is getting caught in the holes and not making tackles.
Yeah, and we weren't expecting a whole lot out of John Bostic, to be honest with you. When he started the season, I remember he started the season, I think, with about 6 tackles and a sack. And then the next game, he had another 6 tackles and a sack. And we thought, well, good, that sack has really lifted his value, but we obviously can't rely on those. Then he had a couple of games, we put some really solid numbers up. We thought, okay, well, maybe Bostic has turned some corner. We weren't expecting him to turn. He also outlasted, you know, Sean Dion Hamilton and Kevin Pierre-Louis and Thomas Davis coming back. But we're a little worried that this is the player, that he is a 4-6 tackle guy, even though he's playing every snap. That's what we assumed. That's kind of what he started the season as. And that's kind of what he's reverted to these last couple of weeks. I think going forward, that needs to be your expectation. And remember that stat crew I just mentioned. Well, this is Bostic's home crew, which means if he gets 8, if you're lucky enough to get 8 tackles, then it might end up being 3 solos and 5 assists because of where he's playing.
And, you know, the numbers that we've seen in the last 2 weeks are what we expected in this summer. But we were expecting him just to be a 2-down linebacker and that he would come out in the passing situations. He's playing 100% of the snaps and is getting the numbers we expected. So it's not a good sign, especially if they decide. Now, Thomas Davis has been invisible. He hasn't even been playing. He was inactive the last game. So there is the concern that if they start taking snaps away from Bostic, those numbers that we're seeing now are going to get worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you who does, I think, have a pretty good matchup, and that is the Washington defensive line just as a whole. Dallas was already a top 5 option for opposing defensive linemen, and that's before they lost yet another offensive lineman in Zach Martin. I'm not sure if Zach Martin is playing this week or not. I need to double check that, but either way, that decimated offensive line has been fantasy friendly, to put it lightly. And that was with Dak Prescott at quarterback. You know, we saw last week Andy Dalton really struggle back there, held onto the ball too long. He should have been sacked probably three or four times. I think he was only sacked once. He narrowly escaped a couple. This Washington D line is going to come after Andy Dalton and Zeke Elliott. So I'm expecting big numbers for Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, and definitely some of these edge rushers like Chase Young and Montez Sweat.
Yeah, and Martin hasn't practiced two straight days now because of the concussion. So it's looking more and more like he's going to be very questionable for this coming game. Now let's move on to Buffalo and the Jets. Here's a Buffalo team who is rebounding from a Kansas City loss. So this is probably a game that you're going to want to go with Bill IDPs. Now, it's not good when three of the top four tacklers that you have in a game are DBs. Now, Jordan Poyer had 10 total tackles, 9 solos and assists with a tackle for a loss. Taron Johnson had 8 solos, and Josh Norman had 6 solos and an assist with a PD and a fumble recovery. Tremaine Edmonds is, we have to wonder if the injury that he suffered earlier on and has rebounded from is affecting his play somewhat, because his production has been mediocre. And their other linebacker that we've been counting on with Matt Milano with a pectoral muscle injury, he practiced all last week, but he didn't play. He was inactive, and he's been limited in practice so far this week. So there's a question mark as to whether or not he's going to play. Now, you had thoughts on Taron Johnson, yes?
Yeah, he's been their slot guy for most of the season. There's a couple of games in there where I don't remember if he got benched or maybe he left the game with a little bit of an injury. But for the most part, he has been their main slot guy. And in that role, he's been racking up quite a few tackles. And this relates to something, Thomas, you were kind of discussing earlier. I think it was in the preseason, actually, or during training camp, was that we can no longer dismiss slot corners as being fantasy irrelevant. We saw it last year with Logan Ryan. We've seen it a bunch. And Taron Johnson is that guy. I think it's a combination of they're going after him a lot because, you know, they've got like Tre'Davious White on the outside. And frankly, their linebackers, Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds are, you know, really good coverage linebackers. So they're trying to find a soft spot in that defense, and they're going after Taron Johnson. So that alone is going to lift his tackle numbers. The other thing is the Bills DBs, the Bills cornerbacks are heavily involved in stopping the run, which is not the case for all, you know, all defensive schemes, but for the Bills, they ask a lot of their cornerbacks when it comes to the run game. So those two factors have really boosted Taron Johnson's numbers. He's had 32 tackles over the last 4 weeks. So he's been a pretty sneaky play as a slot corner. If you're hurting in a cornerback league, this would be a great player to pick up, not only now, but going forward. And anytime these guys are going to go against an offense that might be playing from, or most likely will be playing from behind a lot of opportunities for passes defense, a lot of opportunities for possible interceptions. Taron Johnson could be a really strong play this week. How's it looking on the Jets side?
You know, we were worried about Blake Cashman returning, and his return would cut into maybe Avery Williamson's playing time. Williamson took 95% of the snaps, and he led the team with 11 total tackles. All of them were solos. And Neville Hewitt did his normal fantasy production, and Cashman barely even saw the field. So I don't see Cashman cutting into Williamson's time, at least not for the foreseeable future. Feel comfortable with Williamson until you get bit that first time, and then we'll have to revisit the situation. Now, there's a guy who's been up and down in that secondary. What are your thoughts on Marcus May?
Yeah, I mean, he started the season strong. We had high hopes for him, and we still think he's a strong player. I think Greg Williams has him, and I think I mentioned this last week. I think Greg Williams has him too far back in the secondary to be, you know, close enough to the action. And he might be trying to use him a little bit more, as we were referring to Minkah Fitzpatrick. You know, nothing wrong with Minkah Fitzpatrick as a player. It's just that his role is to play the deep safety more often than not, and that's going to hurt your tackle floor. That was not what May was doing at the beginning of the year. It's definitely what he's been doing lately. However, if he's got to, you know, first of all, he came up for us last week. He did have an interception, but I think it was only two tackles other than that. However, this is going to be the week to see if Marcus May is going to be able to help us going forward. The Bills happen to be one of the most productive offenses for opposing DB production. The Bills give up almost 28 tackles per game to defensive backs. So we're hoping that May will actually see his tackle floor raised to a fairly respectable level of 4 to 6 tackles. Wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't put something like 7 to 10 tackles up in this game. Hopefully he can get a few PD off of Josh Allen. That could be helpful for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their two starting safeties, and they both took 100% of the snaps last week. May had two solos, and Bradley McDougal had just two assists. Those fantasy numbers are not going to help anybody. Yes, they took 100%. But, you know, you have to wonder if Greg Williams is spending more time worrying about Adam Gase as head coach than he is about his defense out on the field.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Let's do it. Carolina at New Orleans.
You know, I just can't get behind any of these IDPs. They are so inconsistent and they disappoint too often. I mean, look at last week. They had their top four total tacklers had 8, 6, 5, and 5 total tackles. That's not good. And especially when you consider that 8 of their 9 big plays were PDs. And in many cases, many of the scoring leagues out there don't even use PDs in their scoring system. So it's extremely hard when you have inconsistency with guys like Shaq Thompson. And we had talked about Tahir Whitehead being a possible three down or two down linebacker, especially if they move Jeremy Chinn into the linebacker position, which they've done. Chinn seeing a lot of time on the field, and it seems to be cutting into the consistency of Whitehead and Thompson, in particular Whitehead. So we do feel, I mean, what are your thoughts on Whitehead himself?
Well, we weren't sure if Whitehead or Shaq Thompson would end up kind of being the leader on this defense. Our money was on Shaq Thompson, but obviously Whitehead brings a veteran presence to the team, and he's definitely has been that player before. He was there with Detroit, and then we saw him do that some with the Raiders. But and he wasn't a part-time player at the very beginning of the season, but that's certainly what's been happening lately. For the past 3 weeks, he hasn't crossed the 60% usage mark. This kind of alludes to what you were saying, Thomas, about you know, them using Chinn more as a linebacker. Whitehead is certainly someone I can no longer trust at Carolina. We're going to get into more stat crews, you know, as we go, as we get more information. Carolina again is a bad stat crew for solos to assist. So we need, for any of our IDPs, Carolina IDPs, we need them on the field for every snap. So I'm happy to roll with Chinn. If you're in a deep league and a DT required league, I think there's some positive things that we're seeing from Derek Brown. Some of that has to do with the fact that Kawan Short is now out for the year. We've seen Derek Brown's snaps move forward, but really outside of that, it's pretty bad. I want Chinn. I want Brown, and then Shaq Thompson, I'm up and down on, particularly when you consider that, they have a pretty bad stat crew, home stat crew. You know, none of these guys, other than Chinn, none of these guys are going to be in the top 10, probably not even top 20 come in the season. And certainly not Tahir Whitehead. Go ahead.
And with Whitehead, you know, obviously with Thompson, the matchup is going to play a key role. When they played Chicago, the Bears only ran the ball 14 times. So you had to take a grain of salt with Thompson's performance. But with Whitehead, you know, he's like you had mentioned, he's not taking 60% of the snaps in 3 straight weeks. That's a clear sign that they're using him in a 2-down role. And when you look at Chinn, I mean, 100%, 89%, 98%, 95% snap count in the last 4 weeks. that's something that you really have to pay attention to, because now you're going to see that they're reverting more to a nickel sub package, and Whitehead is the one that's coming off the field. Now, as far as the Panthers linebackers, or excuse me, the Panthers as a team have allowed opposing linebackers 14 solos and nearly 8 assists per game. But they've only allowed about 0.3 sacks, I think, per game. Now, this is obviously for three linebacker positions, anywhere between what we would say is 2.5, because a lot of teams will run, you know, their two linebacker sets. But in particular, New Orleans will run a two linebacker set. So you're looking at probably 5 or 6 solos and maybe 3 or 4 assists for at least DeMario Davis. So the Panthers do have a fantasy friendly to opposing linebackers.
Yeah, and this will be the second matchup in a row for Davis, where he was, you know, he'd been kind of like a middling LB2 to start the season, but has a nice little run here. He had 10 tackles the week his before the bye week. He had a really good matchup there. Also in this matchup last week, I think it was Roquan Smith that played. Mm-hmm. I think Chicago played Carolina, and Roquan, who is normally kind of a, you know, 7 to 9 tackle guy, had 12 tackles because he was playing the Panthers, and this is a really good matchup for linebackers. So I think this is going to be a good week for DeMario Davis. He's going to have, you know, two solid matchups back to back. So I'm expecting close to double digit tackles for DeMario Davis. Cameron Jordan actually had 10 tackles the last time he played as well. That is unusual. He has a high tackle floor, but not necessarily that high. So it'd be nice to see Cameron Jordan get home. The only thing is that the Carolina offense actually doesn't really give up that many sacks. So we're hoping to get some tackles out of Cameron Jordan, maybe a sack, but this might not be a monster game for Jordan.
Did you say DeMario Davis has the runs? Now let's move on to the Green Bay Houston game. What happened to Ty Summers?
Man,
he didn't start, and he only took 34% of the snaps. Now, he's been there the last few weeks, you know, before and after actually before the bye week. And it's, you mentioned this last week about how teams come off the bye weeks and you just don't know what they're going to do, because they've been messing around and tinkering for 2 weeks and they've had a chance to do some different things. Well, here's a classic example of what you're talking about. Ty Summers comes out off their bye week. He doesn't start. He only takes 34% of the snaps, and he posts just 2 solos and 2 assists.
Yeah, and you know they do like Chris Barnes a lot, and that's clearly what has happened is that they decided to use Barnes more than Summers, and I'm not convinced that this has been settled. I would not be surprised if it bounces back and forth for a little while. What we're really hoping for is that, you know, in the next week or so, we're going to see Christian Kirksey come off the short-term IR from his shoulder injury, and then he'll just take over this position again, and it'll no longer be a headache for us, because there's, you know, Summers has some upside, so does Barnes, but until we see a clear winner out of these two, it's tough to trust any of them. And by the time we find a clear winner, it'll be time for Christian Kirksey to come off of IR. So for me, I'm not messing with either Barnes or Summers going forward.
Yeah, and when Kirksey does come off of IR and he does return, both Barnes and Summers will be irrelevant no matter who starts next to Kirksey in the middle. Kirksey's going to suck up all the fantasy points that are going to be available. So both of them are going to become low on the fantasy value chart. So let's move on to Houston now. Speaking of inside linebackers, Tyrell Adams took 78% of the snaps in Broderick McKinney's role. But he still, even though he took only 78%, he still tied for the team lead with 8 total tackles. He had 6 solos and 2 assists and a sack. He had a tackle for a loss, a quarterback hit, and he had 2 passes defended. So Adams is looking like, you know, we were worried a little bit about Kyle Emanuel joining the team. We were worried as to whether or not Adams was only playing in McKinney's spot because of the fact that at the time McKinney got hurt, or the time that they needed somebody to step in, it was just Adams. Well, no, it's looking more and more like Adams is going to replace McKinney.
And a player I really like that's been pretty a pretty sneaky surprise has been PJ Hall in the middle there for the Texans. He's got 20 tackles over the last 4 weeks, and for DLs, that's the third most tackles for DLs, and he's obviously usually playing a defensive tackle position. So keep an eye on Hall. He's been getting a lot of production there in the middle of this Texans defense. As we all know, teams are trying to do whatever they can to stop J.J. Watt. They also have Jacob Martin and Brennan Scarlett, who are actually doing pretty well coming off the edge. They obviously have some good linebackers as well. P.J. Hall is getting a lot of clean looks, and he's doing good work with them. So P.J. Hall is a great guy to fire up. And going against this Green Bay rushing attack, we could certainly see him chasing a good amount of their rushing attack up the middle. Moving on to Cincinnati at Cleveland. What have you seen from the Cincinnati side of things?
Well, you know, Sam Hubbard went on injured reserve, and we thought, okay, well, Carlos Dunlap is around, and now he'll be able to step back into the lineup. Another big buzzer. Dunlap still didn't start, and he shared snaps with Amani Bledsoe. So there's a serious problem with Dunlap on this team, and Dunlap could be most likely traded before the deadline. I would have to say he's one of the top five IDPs, I think, that's out there that could get traded. And I know that there's rumblings up here in Seattle that the Seahawks are considering throwing a, you know, we'll trade you a fifth round for Dunlap and your sixth round kind of deal out at the Bengals. And who's to say what they're going to do? But it's obvious that with Hubbard being out and Lawson playing in Dunlap's spot, Dunlap didn't come in and take Hubbard's position or rotate Lawson over there. No, they brought in Amani Bledsoe, and he shared snaps with Dunlap. So that's not a good sign.
And you know, the same thing is happening next to him, his longtime defensive line partner, Geno Atkins, yep. Pro Bowler, you know, with that, but before his injury, a couple of years ago, you know, he was on a Hall of Fame track, still might even get there. He also did not start, and he's healthy now. They started Xavier Williams over him. And although Xavier Williams played well, to see Dunlap and Atkins not start when they've lost DJ Reader, they've lost Sam Hubbard, they're in bad shape on their defensive line. And Atkins and Dunlap have been there for a long time, have played at an extremely high level for a long time. So the question is, you know, is Zach Taylor trying to just, you know, completely overhaul this defense? You know, we're also seeing it with Sean Williams. Sean Williams was a major factor last year for the Bengals. He was one of their star players. He played great. He moved up and down the defense, and now he's basically irrelevant. So we see three very important Bengals defenders from the last several years now are basically just relegated to backup roles. And obviously we've had a, you know, change of regime over the past couple of years there for the Bengals. But when you put that together with the fact that the Bengals aren't playing well, I mean, it's just, you know, are we watching the Bengals turn into one of these, you know, New York Jets, Giants, you know, kind of franchises where it just, no matter what they do, things are falling apart. So I would not be surprised if we don't see Dunlap shipped off. And all of what I just said basically underscores what you're saying, Thomas. I think for all those reasons, they may elect to get some of these veterans off the team while they still can, while there's still value there, and they can start rebuilding a new defense around Joe Burrow, or, you know, to help Joe Burrow. And man, Dunlap in Seattle, I'd love to see that.
Indeed.
The other player I want to mention, I just mentioned Sean Williams, and that the reason he got kind of relegated to special teams duties is because they brought in Von Bell. Von Bell had been getting too many assists, not enough solos. He's been turning that around over the last couple of weeks. Last couple of weeks, we're seeing, I think, over his last 29 tackles, 19 of them have been solo. That's great news. but I have bad news to follow, and that's that they're playing in Cleveland this week, and Cleveland is one of the worst teams for awarding more assists than Solo. So this might be another bad week for Bell. He always puts up 6 to 10 tackles, you know, but if he puts up 7 tackles, don't be surprised if it's 2 solos and 5 assists. That's not on Bell. It's on the stat crew.
Speaking of stat crews, it's too bad they don't tabulate or log missed tackles as a stat, because if they did, Andrew Sandejo would be right there at the top. I mean, he had a slew of them last week against Pittsburgh, and how many times he went into the hole, was there to make the tackle and didn't. Now, he did post 7 total tackles with 4 solos and 3 assists, but those numbers should have been up around 7 or 8. He should have had anywhere between 8 and 10 total tackles, but he had too many missed tackles. Now, speaking of tackles, what do you think of the Browns' defensive line?
Well, we all know that there's some great players on this line. They haven't really played up to expectations for a while, but they're getting it going now. We've got, you know, obviously there's Myles Garrett, but it's not just Myles Garrett. Larry Ogunjobi is kind of back on the upswing. So is Sheldon Richardson. The three of them have 17 tackles last week, which is just huge numbers for your, not just the three of them, sorry, the entire defensive line. But most of those tackles, I think 15 of the 17, went to Garrett Ogunjobi and Sheldon Richardson. These are massive numbers, and I really think this defensive line is starting to click, play very well, and that aligns well with their opponent, because the Bengals give up the third most fantasy points for opposing DL. So this could be a really good opportunity for the Browns defensive line to get a nice break coming in this week. Speaking of breaks, if even though sports has had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Detroit and Atlanta.
I got through that. Detroit and Atlanta. I've always wanted to do one of those. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. That was my favorite part. All right. I won't go this fast through Detroit and Atlanta, though. Let's start with you. What did you see? Anything jump out to you watching the Lions?
Rookie cornerback Jeff Okuda has been playing really, really, really well. Now, granted, he led the team with 9 total tackles last week. He had 8 solos and an assist, and he's been pumping a lot of tackle numbers into fantasy lineups. The problem you're going to have with Okuda, though, is that he doesn't produce many big plays. I think he has an INT and a PD over his 5 games played this year. But still, you got to like the fact that he's producing tackles for people. So if you're in a tackle-heavy league and you have to play a cornerback, Okuda is a target.
The thing I saw from Detroit is we're starting to see Trey Flowers heat up, and I think a lot of that has to do with earlier on in the season they were moving Trey Flowers around a lot, and Trey Flowers tends to be more successful off the right end, and that's his natural position. And coming out of the bye, one of the things that I'd mentioned this last week, Matt Patricia had talked about trying to simplify things, and I think that's what they're doing on the defense. Flowers played almost exclusively right end last week, and that has worked to his advantage. So I think going forward, we could see Trey Flowers start to move back into higher fantasy relevance going forward. I hope that continues. Moving on to Atlanta, some interesting things going on with their defense. Speaking of a change of pace, they got a new head coach, which happens to also be their defensive coordinator. What'd you see from the Falcons?
Well, I mean, Foye Olukan continues to shine. He posted, now they weren't huge numbers, and 6 total tackles, 3 solos and 3 assists, but he had a tackle for a loss, and he had his first INT of the 2020 season while taking 100% of the snaps. So we had concerns that Micah Walker, thank you. We had concerns that Walker would take snaps away from Olukan, but you know, even Deion Jones didn't take 100% of the snaps. Deion only took 96. So Olukan is somebody you should definitely be able to run with. He's somebody that we feel confident in, and have been. I mean, you've been touting him for weeks now, and his numbers are starting to prove why that was the case.
He had 6 tackles, 3 solos, 3 assists, and I don't mean to keep being the bearer of bad news when it comes to these tackle crews, but we're seeing a lot of this year, and we're seeing that for one of the first times in Atlanta's stat crew. Here's another stat crew that has seems to have fallen in love with the assist over the solo. So that's hurting a lot of the Falcons numbers across the board. It's hurting Grady Jarrett some. It's definitely hurting Deion Jones and Lewicon. It's also hurting some of their DBs, it's hurting Keanu Neal.
I mean, let's take a look at, he had 6, and we said he had 6 total tackles. That doesn't seem like much, but that ranks him 2nd on the team in week 6, because the highest was 7 total tackles. So it may not seem like a lot, but he's still near the top for the team leaders.
Yeah. Let's move on to Tampa Bay at Las Vegas. This should be a very interesting game. There's I'm going to start with some COVID details that we need to get to. Obviously, if you haven't heard, the Raiders offensive line have all been put on the COVID reserve list. I think it's mainly because one of them has COVID. Yeah, and there's contact tracing there. At this point, we do not know how many of their starting offensive linemen will be there. And this is huge, because the Raiders have one of the best offensive lines of the game. It's the reason that they've been playing so well, and they're off to a good start. And it's the reason, it's the only reason, well, not the only reason, but the main reason why this Tampa Bay defense was going to be up for a little bit of a challenge was this offensive line. If this offensive line is even partially not there, this Tampa Bay defense is going to eat. You're going to see Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and Shaq Barrett do a lot of damage. The only thing I want to mention is that there's another person on that COVID list with them that essentially got put on the list / quarantine, and that's Jonathan Abram. Again, we don't know if he has it. We don't know any details other than the fact that as of right now, he's on that list. He could certainly play this Sunday, but just be very wary of using Abram this week until we know for sure he's definitely going to play.
Yeah, and the case is that they, because of the fact that they didn't have practices on Monday and Tuesday, they were able to set the time frame as Monday, and it's 5 days that they have to quarantine from the start time, which was now Monday. So they will have a decision on Saturday. And unfortunately, we're not going to probably know until Sunday morning. And that's huge, because as you mentioned, you know, the entire offensive line and Abram, who we don't know if they've tested positive or if they are, contact tracing issues. So it's a very risky situation, risky enough to where the NFL decided to take Tampa Bay and Las Vegas off of the Sunday night game and move them to a 4 o'clock time and on Fox, and then move the Seattle Arizona game to Sunday night on NBC to guarantee they would have a national game at in the evening on Sunday night. So it's a big concern as to what's going on here. And now, as far as concerns go, I mean, Tampa Bay, you had mentioned the names of, you know, Sue and Barrett, and 8 of the 11 starters for Tampa Bay last week took 90% of the snaps or more. And the three DLs took 68%, 57%, and 51%. Those are pretty high numbers for your starting 11 players. So they're seeing a lot of time out on the field. And, you know, that in itself is a positive sign for IDP leagues, knowing that these guys are going to see a lot of snaps.
Speaking of that Tampa Bay defense, Can we all stop freaking out about Devin White now? I know he had a couple of slow games and everybody started to worry, you know, and I know early on in the season, it's harder to not freak out, because if it happens in week two or week three, or God forbid it happened in week one, it is hard to tell. Did something major happen? I mean, you know, we saw it happen with the Rams. We thought Taylor Rapp was going to be a major player. And then we saw week one, he wasn't even out in the field because they liked Jordan Fuller so much. But, you know, now we have a little bit of momentum going here. If you have a really good player and they happen to have an off week or even two off weeks in a row, if we see all the correct things, they're playing at almost every snap, you know, their role hasn't changed, all that sort of stuff. You know, it prevents you from overthinking this sort of stuff. And I'm particularly interested in talking about Devin White, because Thomas, you mentioned that White had some really poor luck with game script. In one of the weeks that he had low numbers, he played the Bears. The Bears barely ran the ball. When they did run the ball, it wasn't in his direction. It's going to happen to every great player. So I saw, you know, I'm looking always at the waiver wire because I do a big waiver wire article, and I saw Devin White's numbers, you know, his roster percentage just plummet, and I just thought, oh man, this is amazing. I'm gonna pick this guy up everywhere, and sure enough, he played the Packers. He had 10 tackles, 9 of which were solo, and he had a sack. And it's like, oh yeah, that's the Devin White we thought he was. Nothing's changed. Just sometimes you have bad games. Don't overthink this stuff.
Right. Well, that's the problem, is that a lot of us, and I know, because I've been guilty of it in the past. I've lost championships because of this. You get into the season and you start looking at numerous bits and pieces of information. You start looking at a lot of thoughts and expertise, and you start overthinking things, and you've got to be careful when you do that, because of the fact that you start looking at a guy like Devin White who had a bad game in week 5 against Chicago. Now, the Bears ran the ball 14 times, and one of those was a quarterback scramble. So 13 times that they ran the ball, and when they did, something like 65% of the time, it was outside the tackles. That means that Devin White is not going to have a fantasy productive day. And as you mentioned, he bounced back the following week. But a lot of people overthought the situation. And it's not just Devin White. I mean, we're talking about defensive teams. You know, a lot of people out there are wondering about Tampa Bay's defense and/or, you know, should I play Buffalo or should I play Philly or should I play New England? Look, don't overthink it. If you've got a good defense, run with it. There's going to be games that they're going to fall flat on you. And that's the case with just about everybody out there. They're going to give you a bad game here and there. Don't panic. Don't overthink it. Know the statistics. Know what they're playing against. If they're playing against a team like the Bears, well, if the Bears are playing from behind, or if they're playing a team that you, like the Jets, who you know they're going to play from behind, then the chances are they're not going to run the ball a lot. So there's a good chance that a linebacker in Devin White's case may not fare well against a team like that. So don't panic. Don't overthink it, and know what you're up against that week, and it'll make things a lot easier for you. Now, as far as Tampa Bay goes, I mean, here's another situation in which Tom Brady is going to show up for this game. Now, Tampa Bay is stingy for defensive line fantasy points, but they're solid for linebackers, opposing linebackers, and DBs. Opposing linebackers put up something like nearly 17 points, 17 total tackles a game, and the DBs total somewhere near 22 total tackles a game against Tampa Bay. So Vegas is, you know, I wouldn't say Corey Littleton and Kwiatkowski and Morrow are going to have huge games, but definitely, you know, their secondary, especially if Abram plays, he's going to have a solid game, because here's a situation where you're looking at the numbers and Tampa Bay averages close to 5 or 6 total tackles per defensive back, if you're thinking just 4 defensive backs. So again, know the matchup, don't overthink, and don't freak out when somebody has a bad game.
We got another rant. This I prefer your rants over mine. I have to hear myself rant too often, so I appreciate you taking you bearing the load this week. I'll try and pick that up next week. Moving on to Jacksonville at the Chargers. Got a couple of interesting IDPs in this game, including one who's kind of working his way back from an injury. What did you see from the limited looks we got at Miles Jack this week?
Well, Miles Jack only took 75% of the snaps, and he posted four total tackles, 3 solos and an assist, and one of them, which was a tackle for a loss. He did seem, I wouldn't say tentative, but he wasn't his explosive self. And, you know, that's probably the jitters that you hear players talk about when they're coming off of an injury and they're returning to the lineup. They'll tend to play, I wouldn't say conservative, because you don't play conservative in the NFL and survive, but you definitely play a different way, and you're more protective of yourself. And I don't know if that's a mental thing and or it's a physical thing, but you know, Jack's going to start producing again, and as long as he stays healthy and he didn't have any kind of setback. So it's looking good for Jack.
The player I was watching this last week was Josh Jones. He was ejected the week before for a helmet-to-helmet hit, which didn't look particularly malicious. But, you know, this is what happens for defensive backs, you know, as they try to wrap up as many opponents as they can. Occasionally they're going to bump helmets. Jones got ejected. He only had 2 tackles. So that hurt a lot of us who think of Jones as a DB1. Well, he had a nice bounce back game. He had 9 tackles. And even with that 2 tackle game where he got ejected, he still has 47 tackles on the year, and that's 3rd best for DBs. So if he didn't get ejected, he might be leading the league in tackles for defensive backs. So if you've got your Josh Jones shares, keep running them out, particularly this week against the Chargers. The Chargers happen to be fairly good against defensive backs and linebackers, so this could be a good week for Josh Jones. How about on the Chargers side? Anything that you see worth talking about?
Yeah, Jacksonville has allowed just over 18 total tackles. I think it's like 10.2 solos and 8 assists, plus 1.3 sacks per game to opposing linebackers. So this looks like it could be a big time boon game for somebody that you like at linebacker. Yes.
Yes, sir. And that's Kazir White, somebody both of us have been talking up quite a bit. He had a monster game back in week 5 before the bye, 15 tackles, 10 of which were solo. So this could be, he's got another big one. Yeah, another good matchup. Another player I'm excited to watch coming off the bye is Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa has been bothered with a triceps injury, which he had during training camp, that he's admitted lately that he's been trying to kind of play his way through. He's had a knee injury. In the last game, he barely played. He clearly was not himself. He was just trying to gut it through. Well, he had the entire week off to rest up, and he wasn't even on the injury report now. So I'm really hoping. Go ahead.
Also, Melvin Ingram is due back, I believe, this week. He came off of the injured reserve, has been practicing, and is not on the injury report, and there's a possibility he could play this week. And if he does, that's going to help Bosa too.
Absolutely. We talk a lot about how important it is not only for a defense to have these bookend pass rushers, but how much it helps both pass rushers. You know, if you look at the season end sacks, what you'll often find is, like, for last year, you saw T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree up there, teammates, right? You'll see Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. You'll see Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. These teammates tend to feed off of each other because an offensive line can't cheat to one side or the other. And it really puts a lot of stress on an offensive line, which usually benefits both pass rushers. You know, sometimes you, unlike maybe linebackers who can kind of eat into each other's production, we actually want two really good pass rushers, one on each side of the field or one on each side of the line, because it tends to help both of them. So a healthy Joey Bosa getting his bookend partner back could be a great fantasy matchup for us, particularly going up against Jacksonville if they get behind. There's a lot of pass rush opportunities there. Let's move on to San Francisco at New England. This could be a fun game. Jimmy Garoppolo heading back to New England to play for his own team. What did you see from the San Francisco side of things?
Well, we knew that Quan Alexander was going to be out with a high ankle sprain, and he'll likely be out again this week. We were concerned whether or not Dre Greenlaw would slide from strong side linebacker to the Will side. And that's exactly what he did. And not only did he do that, but he took 100% of the snaps, playing mainly at the Will position. And he led the team with 7 total tackles, all of which were solo. So we were happy to see Greenlaw step up into the Quan Alexander role. And now, as far as the rest of the 49ers, they didn't do too well in the tackle department, did they?
No, you know, only 43 tackles as a whole, as a unit. And normally a defense as a unit will average somewhere in the high 50s to mid 60s. So there were about 15 to 20 tackles fewer than the league average. So across the board, if you had some 49ers IDPs and you were disappointed in their numbers, just understand that it was not likely poor play. There wasn't anybody who beat them to the ball. It's just a matter of the number of snaps that they took and the number of tackle opportunities just happened to be incredibly low. And the reason I put out a lot of bad news early on in this podcast about tackle crews. Well, I finally are going to bring some good news here toward the end, and this is one of them. New England stat crew is great for fantasy. They give us they lean heavily on the solo, and just in general that they award a good amount of tackles. On top of that, New England's offense gives up almost 11 tackles per game to defensive lines. That's the highest in the league, and the majority of that is coming with Cam Newton under center, and he's going to be back this week. So, you know, obviously a lot of quarterback draws and things like that. So your 49ers defensive linemen should see a complete turnaround this week for their poor production the week before.
Before you go any further on that, I mean, you one other footnote to make in regards to the 49ers and their lack of tackles in week six. You know, you had the Rams offense runs a different style of play where, I mean, look, they had 19 rushes. One of them was Goff on a scramble. Two of them were Robert Woods on the jet sweep. So, you know, they only ran the ball 16 times with the running backs, and they threw the ball 38 times. So that definitely takes the 49ers defensive line out of the fantasy production. Again, this is know what the team that you're facing, their tendencies, and know what how many times they run the ball and how many times they pass the ball. Now, as far as the New England linebackers go, we had an Anfernee Jennings sighting again. He started in week six, but he only took 44% of the snaps, and he only posted 3 total tackles, a solo and 2 assists. But Jennings at least is getting out on the field, which is a good thing when you consider the linebacking situation on the Patriots.
Yeah, we have long since warned about using any of these linebackers for the Patriots, and Jawan Bentley is the most productive there, but even he is usually like putting up 4 to 6 tackles. I mean, he's basically putting up numbers that you might get out of an outside cornerback. So, but Thomas, you had mentioned last podcast that Bentley was in line for a great matchup. You still weren't excited to have to use him, but if right. you were ever going to use Bentley, it was going
to
be last
week to use him.
Yeah, and you were right on the money because he put up 12 tackles, 8 of which were solo, which for Bentley were massive numbers. He usually doesn't even put up half that. So great call there. That's likely not going to be the case this week against San Francisco, but that just shows you how important it can be to pay close attention to the matchup. It really can drive a particularly a linebacker who sees probably more opportunity per snap than the other levels of defense. This can really actually move the needle quite a bit. That's something we're trying to help. It's obviously baked into our projections, but we're trying to mention it here. We'll mention it in our articles as well. But that would be why last week, if you looked at our projections, and normally Bentley's in the in the 50 to 60 range, why all of a sudden he had like moved up our rankings a little bit, and that's why, it's because of the matchup, and he in fact did come through.
You had the 49ers this week. They run the ball 165 times this year, and they've thrown it 209. And out of that 165, 11 of them were quarterback scrambles. So you got to consider at least consider 10 of those 11 were actual passing attempts that turned into scrambles. So that's 219 times they tried to throw the ball or attempted the pass to only 155 rushes. So you can see where New England's secondary could be in line for more fantasy production this week than their linebackers.
Let's go. We got 3 more games. We'll try to burn through these for you guys. We got Kansas City at Denver. One thing I want to mention about Kansas City, and we talked a little bit about how, a couple of these defensive lines, like we just mentioned, San Francisco not getting much opportunity. Same thing happened to the Chiefs defensive line. They just did not see much action against Buffalo. Buffalo did a great job neutralizing this defensive line. Only Derek Nnadi who had 2 solos and 2 assists. He was the only defensive lineman to get more than 1 solo. That's just brutal. They should bounce back this week against Denver. And I know you saw some things on that defensive line that you wanted to mention as well, Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs, for the first time in 2020, the Chiefs failed to record a sack in a game. Now, they had 5 quarterback hits in week 6, but they still failed to record a sack. Now, on the opposite side of the scale, we're looking at Denver getting after opponents big time. For example, they had 4 sacks in week 6. They had 6 sacks in week 4, 2 sacks in week 3. They've had 14 total in 5 games. So while the Chiefs have been putting sacks up and didn't do it in week 6, I think both of these teams are going to be getting after the quarterbacks.
Yeah, and one of those guys that has really stepped up has been Malik Reed. With Jeremiah Atachua out, Malik Reed has really stepped up next to Bradley Chubb. He had 5 tackles and 2 sacks last week. I'm not sure when Atachua is going to be back, but if you need an emergency play this week for tackles, I think Malik Reed is good, and I think he's got some better matchups going forward. Just keep in mind that Kansas City doesn't give up that many sacks, and a lot of that is due partly because they have a really good offensive line, but also, man, I tell you, it's harder to find a quarterback that can slip out of the pocket and slip out of a defender's grasp than Patrick Mahomes. So we do like this defensive line this week, but it might be more things like pass defense. Like, for example, Shelby Harris, great guy for passes defense. He's always getting his hand up in the air. I had 2 passes defensed last week. Just don't expect a ton of sacks, but you still could get a good amount of production against this KC team.
Yeah, you're going to have Reed and Bradley Chubb both trying to contain Patrick Mahomes on the outside, but you also have, Travis Kelce going over the middle, and they're going to suck Chubb and Reed out of the position of maintaining control of Mahomes on the outside. So again, I mentioned that they will be getting after the, both teams are going to be getting after the quarterback. It'll be interesting to see if Denver can convert any of this pressure and apply the pressure on Mahomes. But as you had mentioned, Mahomes is a very slick and oily guy. Bringing him down is not an easy task.
For sure. Moving on to our Sunday night game. This is Seattle at Arizona. Let's start with Seattle side of things. What do you see there?
Well, if sacks are what you seek, look elsewhere. Arizona is allowed just 0.2%, 2/10 of a sack per game, and Seattle has very few. They don't seem to apply pressure very much on opposing quarterbacks, and even when they do with Murray, Kyler Murray is going to be a slippery kind of guy, and I could see Seattle playing more conservative and trying to contain Murray more than applying pressure on him, and that puts stress on the secondary. But What do you think of the stress on the linebacking situation?
Well, two things I want to say here about the linebackers. One is that Bobby Wagner was one of those players that people were kind of freaking out about early in the season because he had a good amount of assists compared to solos. And they were like, what's wrong with Bobby Wagner? He looks slow. You know, he's not. Right. Somebody even said, like, I'm not sure he's trying hard. I'm like, I'm not sure what you're watching, but Bobby Wagner looks amazing still. And then over the last couple of weeks, he's been putting up, you know, 14 tackles, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that not only was he, you know, his first five games, three of his first five games were at home, where Seattle's stat crew is notorious for giving more assists to solos, but one of his other games was at Atlanta. And remember earlier in this podcast, I mentioned that Atlanta is one of the worst offenders at more assists than solos. That means Wagner's had four out of his first five games were assist heavy. Well, going forward, he's got four out of his next six games away, and two of those games are at Buffalo and at Arizona, and both of these stadiums are much more solo heavy. So if you have any opportunity to have picked up Bobby Wagner because some fool dropped them, now's the time to pick him up, because now we're going to get to see Bobby Wagner explode for these 13 and 15 tackle games, including 8 and 10 solo tackles, and you'll be right there to pick all that up. But the other part of the linebacker I want to talk about was last week, or you know, the last week that they played, I think it was week 5, Cody Barton was on the field, and they really do like Cody Barton as a linebacker. He had 14 tackles, and we like Cody Barton too. He plays with a lot of energy, plays downhill well. The only thing is that that's just not likely to be repeated. He played just 68% of the snaps, so it's just, you know, that's like a hitter getting three at bats and going 2 for 3. And you think, wow, this guy's hitting 600. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. It's just not enough playing time. And also, you know, normally even 68% was an incredibly high number of snaps. He's likely to go back to being a part-time role. And in addition to that, the team did sign Michael Kendricks to the practice squad, and they had Michael Kendricks in this third linebacker role last season. He did very well in it. So, I just didn't want anybody going out thinking that they need to be firing up Cody Barton based on those 14 tackles.
Right. And also, Jordan Brooks has been returned to practice this week, even though it's been a limited basis because of a knee injury. He is practicing. Now, Kendricks most likely is going to be at least a week away before he can see playing time because of the whole COVID situation and the protocol that they have to have. He has to be on the practice squad for, I believe, a week. There's a strong possibility that Barton will revert back to a backup role if Brooks is healthy. And when Kendricks starts to play, Kendricks is going to see a lot of time. Now, I like the Kendricks signing. I was hoping that they would do this. And this leads back to what you were talking about with Bobby Wagner. Wagner will thrive even more so with Kendricks in the lineup, because Kendricks is a good cover linebacker, and he's also he has the ability to bring pressure off the edge. Now, on the opposite side of the field, Speaking of pressure off the edge, Hassan Reddick looked more like Chandler Jones than Chandler Jones did.
Did he?
He had four solos, an assist, and he had two sacks, two tackles for loss. He had two quarterback hits, and he had a PD. This is big considering that Reddick has not lived up to expectations with the Cardinals, but Chandler Jones had done a disappearing act, and now that Jones is done for the year, Reddick is, we were concerned whether it would be Reddick or Kylie Fitz. I think Reddick, even though Fitz was inactive last week, I think Reddick will get another opportunity this week, even if Fitz is healthy.
Yeah. And it definitely helps that Seattle gives up the highest number of sacks to defensive line and edge per game. They give up almost three per game. So if let's assume Reddick's going to be out there, which we think he will, I would not be surprised to see Reddick do well. And by the way, yeah, he's got four sacks on the season. So he certainly, and I think he has like 15 tackles. And now with this increased snap count, we could see Reddick start to become fantasy relevant for us. And this week could be that week as well.
One thing for folks to pay attention to on Sunday night is something that I've seen in the home games that I've worked. Russell Wilson he's working his way to a MVP candidate, or at least for votes for MVP. The thing about Russell Wilson is that he holds the ball quite a long time. You'll see, you can actually sit there when they snap the ball, count 5-6 seconds before he gets hit. And a lot of the sacks that they're giving up is because he holds onto the ball too long. And so this Sunday, pay attention to that when you're watching the game. And count when the ball is snapped, how long it takes before Wilson gets rid of the ball. And you'll see that there will be quite a few. There will be at least 10 to 15% of the time he's over 4.5-5 seconds holding onto the ball.
Yeah. Let's move on. We got a last one, a Monday night game, the new Monday night game, Chicago at the Rams. Let's start with the Bears. Anything you saw there from the Bears' perspective?
Yeah, Akeem Hicks. I mean, you were all over him early on, and he continues to have a career year. He only had two solos last week, but he took 87% of the snaps. He did have a tackle for a loss, a quarterback hit, and a fumble recovery. He is seeing a lot of playing time, and he's being very, very productive.
What I saw from the Bears was, let's move along to their linebackers. I'd mentioned last week that Roquan Smith had a great matchup. That was the Panthers one that I'd mentioned earlier in the podcast. And he came through, he had 12 tackles and a pass defensed, which, you know, he's been normally floating around that 6 to 8 tackle range. It was great to see him get over that hump to the double digit tackle range. However, this week he's got one of the worst matchups. The Rams are one of the stingiest teams for linebacking production. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on. Hopefully you got to enjoy Smith's double digit tackles this week. You know, he's probably still going to be a solid 6 to 8 tackle guy, and not that he's not capable of hitting that double digit tackle range, but if he kind of slips back and gives you like 5 tackles or 6 tackles this week, just understand that as much as he benefited from the matchup last week, he's going to suffer from the matchup this week. Just happens to be a bad matchup.
Yeah. I mean, the Rams only allow something like, what is it, 8 total tackles eight solos, I think it is, per game. So it's like 14 total tackles, 8 assists and 6 solos, 2 linebackers, plural. So, yeah, it's definitely not a good matchup on paper.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of linebackers, and let's go over to the Rams side of the ball. Micah Kizer returned to the lineup, and he took 100% of the snaps, whereas Troy Reader, zip. And that's what we were afraid of, that we figured that Kizer would return and take all the snaps, and Reader would go back to being a special teams player. Now, Kizer tied for the team lead with 13 total tackles. He had 7 solos and 6 assists. So feel comfortable if you're going to run Kizer out there this week.
And then finally, something that I had read about and then watched some film and saw how they're using him. A very interesting thing is going on with the Rams. There last week, they started moving Jalen Ramsey around. Instead of just kind of being like their quote unquote shutdown corner, they think he has a much broader skill set. He's a really big dude. He's a really tough tackler. He knows a lot about the defense. He's more than just a shutdown corner. As valuable as that is, they think that he can be more valuable to them if they move him around and get him involved on all three levels of the defense. We see he played the slot, he played wide, he played actually on the defensive line a little bit. So although we only had four tackles last week, we still think this is something we're going to watch carefully. There's a chance here that Ramsey, as he gets more comfortable, you know, and maybe this is just a couple of week experiment, but it doesn't seem like it. I think they have big plans for Ramsey to be more involved. So it could be that he could start putting up safety-like numbers as opposed to shutdown corner numbers. And he's a huge playmaker. He's got huge playmaking upside. So something to watch carefully going forward. Don't do anything yet. But over the next couple of weeks, if we start to see Ramsey's numbers rise to 7-8 tackles a game, maybe a couple extra PD, some tackles for loss, maybe start getting some sacks, Ramsey could sneak in and become a very valuable fantasy asset. Okay, that's going to wrap us up for this week's mm-hmm. Week 7 IDP weekend preview. You can read more about our stuff. You can check out our projections. You can learn a lot about tackle rates and snap percentages. We put a whole bunch of data up on the fantasypoints.com website. If you become a premium member, you can also join our Discord chat and reach out to us individually, and we can help you make some tough lineup decisions. Thomas, as always, my man, this was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for joining me. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Be well and be safe.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.